journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Oh yes. Good afternoon, good morning, and good evening, and good night. This is JP. It's Journeys with JP, and it's the 3rd of November 2014, and I have a very mystery guest tonight, and I just hope he's going to call in. So until he comes in, all I can say, it's a he, and then we'll see what happens with this. Oh, that's the kettle boiling. That's a good idea. And yeah, so anyway, I'm just going to put on my special headphones here and just get ready for... There we go. Excellent. So now I've just put on my radio headphones so that I can have a conversation with someone. So we'll be joining them as soon as they join us. And we'll find out exactly. 775-773-2133. Yep, there we go. So... if all the Skype links should bounce from one to the other and coming in all the way from somewhere, possibly in the desert. Well, anyway, we'll see what happens. Until that time, what's been happening? Oh, yeah, somebody sent me today. It was supposedly come from NASA, and NASA was saying that there were going to be 6 days of darkness in December. As a result of some solar flares and some puffy clouds or something like that, or space dust. But it was interesting that it kind of did the rounds. People have been talking about something that's going on in November. Who was it now? It's Terrell, isn't it? He's talking about something that's coming by November 15th. So we've got a fortnight left. To have good fun, and then something happens. I do have to say that I've had a sense of anxiety over the last few days, and I often talk about it, and sometimes it's, you know, the anxiety kind of goes away, but it's like this impending feeling, and it doesn't feel personal, but it feels like something. I don't know, but I get that. I probably get that a lot. Thing is, there's a kettle in the background. That's what's whistling away. That will continue doing so until I stop it. So I'll probably have to do that in a little while. Hopefully, while my guest is speaking. That's why I've got the headphones on, the radio headphones. Anyway, until that time, how are we doing? Well, it's good to... Oh, well, there's lots of things that are in the chat room there, having a good time. Good to see you all, and yes, good fun to hear Roger Silver on Herbal Fluzzy's show earlier on today on Channel B, Studio B on Revolution Radio. Oh yeah, might as well do the thing. Yes, while we're at it, the Studio B and Studio A are listener-supported radio stations. We have needs for server space and server bandwidth. And all that stuff that costs money, costs real money, that we're all volunteers. Nobody gets paid for it. And so the station keeps going on these donations. So you can even buy products. One of the things we could do that you could do is buy a DVD of Journeys with JP. That's almost a rhyme. I don't care. I'm a poet and I don't care. Anyway, so if you go to... Revolution Radio and look at the support, you can actually see DVDs of your favorite host. I mean, maybe even if your favorite host was Mona, for instance, you could get a whole year worth of Adventures of a Feral Hippie. I don't know. Have you done a whole year yet, Mona? I don't know if you have. But, so, yeah, if you want to join in the whole fun of the thing, and everybody gets a cut, actually. If people buy these DVDs, then the host of the show actually gets a cut, and that's the only time they ever get paid. Let me tell you. Yes. And it hasn't happened enough yet, but the idea, that's how it goes, and I think it's a very generous thing that Hawk is doing. So, having said that, we still haven't got Mr. Sings. I wish I could play a music. Anyway, let me just send a message. Call in now. Yeah, I don't know how leisurely he was imagining I was saying call in, you know, so I was saying. But he's calling in over a telephone line, and it's probably all gone completely tee up. Anyway, yes, welcome to... oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, we're going to be using a Skype recorder tonight. That's quite cool. Go away. Yeah. So we're asking our mystery caller to mysteriously call in. So while we're at it... yeah, so the 6 days of darkness. There was this thing. It's one of these things that I've been thinking about for years and years and years, is the idea of this period where the Earth stops spinning, and that is, you know, it's much not as dense as people think it is, you know, and that it takes less force to stop it from spinning than people thought, because it has done it before. One of the things... let's talk about this now, because that's quite an interesting thing. There is a temple in Egypt which is called Karnak, I believe, K-A-R-N-A-K. Not to be confused with the Temple of Karnak in France, which might have had some similar purpose. I don't know, whatever Karnaks are. Canines? Karnaks, maybe? Karnaks? Hey, maybe it's Canadians. Anyway... in the Temple of Canadians, in Temple of Karnak in Egypt, is a frieze, a carved stone depiction, and on one, it's got two panels, and on one panel it shows the stars as we know it, and on another one it shows the stars. Kind of upside down and upside down and back to front, and that's the idea, is that that's how it used to be and that's how it is. So that the stars were kind of, you know, the Earth was somehow spinning in a different direction, is what the message is. Now my personal theory on the origin, you know, something has always puzzled me, right? Because I was brought up learning to read and write in two languages, and one went left to right and the other one went right to left, and it always puzzled me, you know, why is that? And so if you add all of these pieces together and think about what is the normal flow. If you're in the northern hemisphere, the normal flow is the way that the sun goes. So the sun goes from your left to your right as you're looking at it, you know, in the south. And so when you have a situation, a regular situation, the way that the sun goes is the way that things normally go, and we read things from left to right, and our newspapers go that way and everything like that. But I was also brought up learning to read Hebrew, which had these, it was backwards, it was, you know, everything was right to left, and the books came the other way, you know. So, you know, you start the book at the other end of the at what you might consider to be the end and work backwards. And that was something that always puzzled me until I came across Emmanuel Velikovsky, who wrote a book called Worlds in Collision, which also said the same thing. And he was saying that about 3,500 years ago, a large body came by, a planetoid, possibly a comet, and mixed its atmosphere with ours, and came very, very close. I mean, really close enough to affect tides and, you know, draw up water. And this is the story behind the story of the Exodus, with Moses and the whole Dead Sea, you know, crossing the sea and all that stuff, and the 10 plagues is all the result of the natural phenomena of a planetary collision, you know, because we think that we get the idea that, you know, out there in space it's all quiet and calm. You know, the music's always very calm when you're in space. Yeah. Hang on. I've switched it off. I had the theremin running earlier. I could have done the space sound. But the sound in space, who knows? Maybe space is a little busier than we might think. And there's things that go that whiz by. Or other things. Maybe there are little solar systems that whiz through a larger solar system where there's a big gap, or maybe where there's no gap. Maybe it just kind of crashes through. Do these things happen? Well, that's what people like Terrell are saying, there's a dark star that's swinging over us, and will be arriving on our doorstep in a couple of weeks' time. And this is what he's been saying last year. I don't know. But like I said, I felt that there's a kind of anxiety. Now, something may or may not happen. Whether something does or not. There's earthquakes. There's solar flares. I tell you, the last solar flare, that really did us in. It seems to have destroyed everybody's sense of time, of regularity, of being able to like sleep for 8 hours a night. You know, people are sleeping an awful lot less. And so I do believe that all of the things that are going on the planet are not always to do with like the chemtrails or HARP or things like that, that there are energies as well that are you know, just gonna whack through everything. There's no way to protect from them. There's no way to simulate them. There's no way you can do anything about them. They're galactic level forces that will just override anything. And you know that they've been talking about big solar flares that will wipe out. I mean, we already saw, what is it? Not the Carrington event. Was it the Carrington event? It happened in the 1870s, I think, and or 1890s. It was the telegraph era, and all the telegraphs burnt out because this solar flare went onto Canada, and all the long cables that were the telegraph cables just became aerials, and they took in a whole load of electricity from the sun and just fried, you know, like fuse wire. Yes, but anyway, I wonder where the mystery guest has gone. Yeah. 5 minutes, he called me. It's 5 minutes before the show. He called me. Anyway, we'll see. Maybe he's out of zone, standing in a car park in a metal building somewhere. No sound on all Wall Spirit Radio. Oh, right. Is that right? Oh. Yes. Welcome to Wall Spirit Radio, everybody. Yes, I didn't have the button pressed down that clued everybody into Wall Spirit Radio, so you could hear the theme tune, but you couldn't hear me for 14 minutes. Don't worry, I've been talking. Okay, so I've been talking about the galactic wave and the effects on us and on our brains and upon people's behavior. I don't know if you've noticed. Has anybody been like out of whack recently? Is everybody having a wonderful relationship?
There's been a lot of triggers. Let's put it that way. And these triggers are opportunities to heal, aren't they? They trigger times, they trigger feelings that come from times before we had words. And so they become a blind rage. And that's what I've been looking at this week. Where is it? No one answered. Oh, right, okay. Something's gone awry. Maybe I had better put it on a tune. Maybe I need a tune, yeah, that would be good. I don't often do this. This is a non-copyright tune. Rowan is, well, it's non-corporate. This is Rowan Weil featuring Emma. It's called My Shadow Steps. Really cool. Friend of mine sings this. I won't go long. Okay, yeah, well, excuse me, everybody, I had to deal with a few situations. Number one is my guest couldn't get through, so I've had to patch in another laptop to see if he can get in. Oh, God, why does everything go wrong? Why does it all go wrong for me? Oh, poor me, poor me, poor me. I have set up. Okay.
go ahead. So, where were we? I was talking about various things. I'm waiting for him to call in. I've got several screens that I need to monitor. So that was... maybe I should have played some more music. And nobody can hear me on... Right, okay. So, welcome back to Journeys with JP. I've been... I've been messing about with bits of wire and laptops, and I've got one patched in. I hope it's all going to connect in for him, and that should bring him to channel one into the input of that. So we'll see. Oh God, I wish I could call you. Anyway, so yes, where are we? So I was talking about the space. Yes, the idea that planet has reversed in the past is or rotated in the opposite direction. Let's put it that way. And so that's several data points. I mean, that's the one from Egypt. Now they don't carve things into stone as a joke. You know, they don't do it as a fantasy. Actually, the same. You know, in Egypt, they have these pictures, and you see these pharaohs, and the pharaohs are like 15 feet tall, and the people are really tiny, little cute little people. You know, and they look like, you know, fully grown people. So that's the size of them, and they say, oh well, it was to aggrandize the ego of the great pharaoh. No, I believe that they were actually 15 feet tall. And that's why people imagine that they were gods, that they were, you know, whatever, that sort of thing. Hang on, just checking that. Yep, should have sound now. Good. Yeah, welcome back, Wolf Spirit Radio. I've been blathering away on Revolution Radio. Actually, the DVDs, they'll be a really good thing, because I've had some excellent guests in the past, and it would be well worth checking them out. The other thing you can check out is the amazing stuff that I've got on my website. A lot of it, the new stuff, has really kind of given it some life, is from my girlfriend, Wolf Baby, who's been... making these beautiful shungite pendants, which not only look really cool, but you know, put a nice feel around you, and they're all unique, and they all have their own little character. Very cute little things. So it's been a very a productive time last few weeks, and well, like I say, the shungite does have an effect on you, and it has a harmonizing effect. It's had a great harmonizing effect on my relationship with her. She's found purpose, and it's great. You know, it's excellent. So, yes, we have a number. I wonder, is this... Hello, are you there?
No, JP, hello.
Oh, you're there. Thank you, Lord, for... Thank you, the angels of communication.
Nobody was answering.
Nobody was answering. So, what did you just do?
I don't know. I just plugged away at it and just kept calling.
All right. Well, that's really weird. Anyway, so here you are. Can I announce who you are now? I've told him you're my mystery guest. Do you wish to remain anonymous still? Do you want me to put you through a pitch shifter? Do you want me to do a cobra on it?
The person who puts Ebola and Fukushima all in the one category. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, Captain, Mr. Sir, Esquire, William, Brett, Mr. Stillings. Yes.
Fascinating.
Yes, indeed. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, do you want to land the TARDIS? Should we land the TARDIS? I think this is...
Yeah.
Where's it? Yeah, number 10. Yeah, let's land the TARDIS. Here it comes. There we go. All right. Now, just further over there. Oh, never mind. Okay. Okay, so we've landed the real-life Doctor Who. How are you?
Good jumping all around, doing a little bit of radiation reading and stuff, mostly along the coast, west coast, and putting about 3 hours worth of footage together, radiation detector footage, and readings, going to edit it on the PC and put it on YouTube. But I don't know if I have anything to report. Going along the West Coast beaches, and all in exception really of Huntington Beach in the LA Basin, and a few places above San Francisco, and a few other small places. You know, San Diego looks clean. Oceanside is pretty clean. Most places along the West Coast is just clean. For nuclear reactors melting down over in Japan, some spots in the U.S., which does make sense. I mean, San Francisco is going to get nailed, Huntington Beach, the way the currents go, and in between, but Washington might get nailed a little bit. And Canada is certainly going to get nailed. But surprising in some spots, it's relatively clean. So, that's going to be my overall findings, really, and that's what's basically going to be presented to the public.
So it's like a lot less to worry about than we're being told. Is that right? Is there a kind of double psyop going on? They're saying, oh, no, there's nothing to worry about. So people go out and say, oh, yeah, there's loads to worry about, because they're saying there's nothing to worry about. And yet, actually, in the real world, there is actually nothing to worry about. It's a real head nod, that one. Is that more or less it?
Well, is and isn't. It's disastrous in itself. But surprisingly, the beaches are pretty clean. We're looking at 3-4 years after the event. And in some places is surprisingly clean. I mean, in the places that were clean, I wasn't getting over a 50 count per minute. In Huntington, Huntington Beach was something else. I mean, geez. There was a sample that wasn't 1 ounce, and the thing was getting 700 to 800 becquerel. And, that's scary. That I left the beach. I didn't stay. Places like swimming in hot particles or something. And, I took off out of there, but, 3 or 4 samples that came up basically the same. Some, 300 to 700, 900, vacate. That was good enough for me, to leave. But, people aren't, in actuality, people aren't being told much of anything, it is bad and also isn't. It doesn't seem to be catastrophic. It doesn't give the indication of leaving the northern hemisphere for the southern hemisphere. But I wouldn't say it's clean overall, and I'm not. I'm saying specifically that some areas are surprisingly clean. And beautiful sunset, by the way. I'm going to put the YouTube together and invariably come across some videos that I've forgotten about and some readings. I can think one already. But Oceanside came up clean. I was like, oh, look at that. it came up clean. The beach came up clean. The shoreline came up clean. Of course, the water came up clean. Somebody caught a fish, a real small fish. And I asked them, unusual request, but can you donate the fish to science and let me cut the fish open and do a reading? And he looked at me and laughed, and he said, you want to cut the fish open? And I said, yeah. And he said, sure, have at it. And he sat there and watched me, pull out the detector and everything. He says, you're really measuring that for radiation? And I said, yep, I really am. And he says, is this because of that Fukushima thing? And I said, yep, it sure is. And, but, yeah, I cut open the fish, went towards the spine, and didn't get really anything, any appreciable, reading, really. Nothing to scare or anything, nothing to worry about.
And it didn't have 9 heads or anything?
No, normal looking fish. I crushed up the spine really effectively. I ground it and, did it on a piece of glass and measured it and then remeasured it and let it dry a little bit and then remeasured it and it came up clean.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, go figure. You know, it doesn't explain, the Alaskan fisheries, deadliest catch, where, for the last 3 years or the last couple of years, they've caught almost no crab, and all the crabs they've caught are either STD or they're deformed or burnt in some cases. They look kind of burned in a certain way, as far as the shell and everything, the deformity, and the starfish. If you look at all the testing that they do for, in biology, none of them test for radiation. And we have an Ebola scare, a mystery illness, and radiation, and what that equates to. They're gonna, develop, should we tell the listeners?
Well, look, this is something that I've been talking about anyway, is the Ebola scare is literally fear porn. It's not actually a virus. It's not airborne. It's fear porn. It's to make you scared, and then you get radiation sickness, which, yeah. Tell us about the mystery illness, because this is something. Have you been holding on to this for a long time?
A little bit. Yeah. I will go into a theoretical story. Let me tell you all a little story, and all it is just a little story, a little made up little story. But suppose there's this entity called the government or something. Or the military industrial complex. And there were companies, biopharmaceutical companies, that specialized in making bird flu or something, or sidetracked to bird flu vaccine. So what if you took a not-so-scary Ebola, which is honestly pretty dominable by a lot of just the common antibiotics that we have in the world. And say if you made the Ebola a more common bacteria viral thing. Starts with a C and I can't think of it. But made it common to where you could say that most people carry the Ebola virus or something. And make it to where if you crossed it with some of the bird flu vaccine to make it appear to be something else, or to make it appear like an aggressive Ebola, but not, but the antibody or an antibody. The traces of the virus remain, and then you have a mystery illness, which is really radiation. So even though people test positive for Ebola, they're dying of radiation, and but they call it Ebola. Now, such a scenario, ridiculous, sounds
totally off the wall, could never happen kind of scenario where. Something that was residual, you're saying, that could be found in just about everybody because, we all drink milk, and it's, you know, part of what the cows have been drinking, and, you know, it's all part of the food chain, and can be found in just about everybody, and you won't need to, you know, and that's, I think our audience is getting the idea. I can feel the latency being sort of drifting past. So, interesting story. Do you have any other fairy stories?
Yeah. Well, one of them was I went up to one of the botanists or one of the oceanic what do you call those people? I'm really
sailor?
Short on.
Fisherman?
Naval
submarine commander?
They study the life in the sea.
Oceanographer? No.
Oceanographers.
That's somebody who maps the ocean. Ocean biologist.
Ocean biologist.
Yeah. The ocean takes up half of the planet, and we don't think about it, you know. But there are people who do think about it. Some people care about it, and that's good.
Hey. Yeah, I'm really distracted right now. But you study the people studying the starfish that are liquefying and turning to jelly, kicking off their appendages and then turning to ooze. Is none of the labs, none of the people studying it test for radiation. And, they go, they don't want to test for it. You go bring them a Geiger count, they'll run from you. You say, no, here's a Geiger count. Go test for radiation. And they don't. They know. One conversation with somebody, 10 minutes into the discussion, was I got a very quick, I know. We can't say anything. And he said, are we done? And I said, yeah, we're done. And that was the end of the conversation. And they don't want to know, or they don't want to, there's too much, of course, money in the study, which is fine also. But it's turning a blind eye to, people can maybe assess, 2009, 2010, why such the aggressive kill off of marine life, with the Navy killing off the whales, sonar tests, dolphins and everything. And why such the die off, getting a lot of nuclear reactors on the east coast of America, off the east coast to have the radiation radioactive plants. Release radiation into the sea as a precursor, to possibly kill off a lot of life in the sea before Fukushima. So when Fukushima happened, there wouldn't be much life left in the sea really to die off in mass. Why was Japan killing off all the dolphins? I mean, come on, they don't eat that much fish. For the fisheries, they don't eat that much. Like, come on. Even in the season when they weren't fishing and they're still killing the dolphins and everything, you remember that?
Yeah, what's that about then?
That was an aggressive, they're killing off the whales too. Why kill off the whales? I mean, what point was there in that? They don't come in close enough to affect the people fishing. They eat a lot, but the fishermen have always been used to that. If that were the case, the plan, of course, kill off a whole bunch of whales over a long period of time instead of having a whole bunch of whales die all at once and wash up on the beach and stuff. Have 100 or so whales wash up at the beach at once. That draws attention. We had that happen a few times. After Fukushima, remember?
Yeah, there were so do you think that there's a kind of replenishment going on? Do you think that the ocean is picking up again, or do you think that there's it's going to take a lot longer than that to for it to regrow. I mean, I'm going to ask another question, but it's kind of related on a kind of scale thing, is that if you eat radiation, it's the pieces, it's the molecules of the radiant material that are basically cooking, sending out microwaves that are cooking the inside of your body, like from each molecule. Is that something that, is that what's going on?
No, yeah. I mean, you're irradiating or, picking up a higher energy, from whatever isotope it is, or and there's like 50 plus different isotopes, which, easily that come out of a nuclear plant. It's just not plutonium and uranium. It's transmuted all sorts of different elements. And, you have an electron exchange. It's ionizing. It's a higher energy state. Splitting DNA and making it recombinantly change differently. It just makes a mess of things. It's a mess. It makes a mess of things. Helen Caldicott says it best. It just doesn't go away. It's messy, and it gets more messier. And it gets more messier. It just accumulates in all sorts of different places you don't want it to. And there's different isotopes, technetium, mendelium, uranium, plutonium, iodine, all sorts of cesium, all sorts of crap. Different isotopes of technetium, different isotopes of mendelium, and they all have specific effects on different parts of different organs. They do all sorts of different things. The technetium is nasty. Stuff with the shortest half-life, that's just the nastiest stuff. And it does a lot of damage. I mean, it's an incredible amount of energy packed into, Are you there?
Oh, yeah. I'm listening. I'm thinking, So this is not a good scene to want to, how do we fix it? Let's talk. Can we talk solutions yet, or have you got some bad news still? You got more.
I guess just lay it
all out, in one go, and then we'll talk about maybe solutions.
Worst case scenario, I mean, there is no cleaning it up really. I mean, that mess is, it's just it's not cleanable. It happens when when it goes away, and they're extremely long, there's 10, 20 year, 100 year, 1,000 year isotopes, 100,000 year, alpha emitters, which, if ingested are horrible or terrible. It accumulates, it'll attack the most aggressive species, sharks, whales. Moves up the food chain, people. That's what gets hit hardest first. Sharks, whales, people, and the first things that we're going to get to is the plankton. And fish eat the plankton, shark eat fish, people eat shark, people eat fish. It gets nasty and it just stores and stores and transmutates, becomes different elements I gave up trying to, tell people which elements and metals and nonmetals to collect. So they can, guard against the radioactive material, and losing reactor 4 in Japan, that just, threw that all off the table. I mean, that no longer, there's no, there's no, no reasonable way to guard against, you know, 50 plus radioactive isotopes. It's just, it's not going to happen. You know, besides ODing on potassium iodide, you know, supplementing and, you know, with potassium iodide only blocks the uptake of radioactive iodine or cesium by about 75% for the first 10 minutes of supplementing. And it only blocks the uptake, for, you know, by 75% for the first 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And, you know, and if a hot wave came through, that's only if you knew a hot wave was coming through. And that's, you know, that's dicey at best. There's, you know, 49 other things to guard against. There's, you know, quite a few other things. And, you know, much less people, not, you know, the most common, most people commonly trying to guard against just potassium iodide. It's hard enough to get them to remember where they left the car keys. Much less to, you know, go make, you know, salts and stuff to guard against, or compounds to guard against, technetium, uranium, plutonium, or whatever, cesium or iodine or hydrogen or whatever. There's just, it's just far too much to you know, it's just, I've spoken with you lots on this, JP. You know, that's why I basically broke it down to just, how to get out of the northern hemisphere and get to the southern hemisphere and legally stay in Australia or some other places. And that's basically, you know, worst case scenario, that's all that people can do. But, you know, but so far, 4 years after the event, it doesn't look that bad. A lot, there are some places that are crappy. Some places that, a couple of beaches, near Orange County and near LA, and a couple of places, just above San Francisco, which were scary, which I, vacated. I didn't stay on the beach and I left. But other places, you know, Chernobyl had higher readings over here in America than what I'm seeing on some of the beaches. So, you know, it's the ocean current. Sure, that more than likely. Something else, probably. Something's going on. So it's not all bleak and grim. It's not great, and it's definitely not great what happened. But it's not. So far, it's not awful.
So, do you think it's that we're basically doing well, better than you expected after 4 years after Fukushima, or 3 years after Fukushima? That's three and a half years, isn't it?
Yeah, but I also have to keep in mind that this is the accelerated point. You know, people start to see an ill effect 7 to 10 years after Chernobyl. This is far worse, and seeing things much closer in duration is certainly to be expected. It's 3.5 to 4 years, but still looks surprisingly good. I mean, there's not much damage as it seems, and things look relatively pretty good. You know, whether we say that in 5 years or whatever, you know, see the one clear sign would be that the oxygen level will drop down from 21.3%. So anyone's got an O2 counter, you know, anyone out there got a O2 detector? That would be the thing that you calibrate with propane instead of using the what they, you know, calibrates better. Anyone got one of those? Do a good old-fashioned reading of outside air and tell us what it is. I will confidently say that it's down from the 21.3% that it is now. It's down to 21.1, 21.0. And if as bad as I originally thought, if that were the case, it'll be 19.8% by the end of 2015. So 2016, the oxygen level If the majority of the plankton in the ocean dies, the oxygen level will drop down to about 19.8% globally in the northern hemisphere by 2016. So, and that's actually a very accurate, more intel and more information than I can really reasonably say on the air or in person or to people.
So, is this a terraforming by a race that uses less oxygen? Is it intended to literally starve us, starve the human race off the face of the planet? What's the intent behind this? Do you know?
Well, I don't know about intent, but I can comment on the end result with a few stories.
Tell us some stories.
Thank you. All right.
Some stories.
Let's look at a different planet or something. Let's see.
Let's say Aldebaran.
No. Venus. No. Pluto. No. Mars. Let's say Mars. Nice random pick. If a planet were to resemble Mars, it would happen in a way where there would be a gross amount of radiation release, and to where the food chain somewhat drops off significantly towards nil. And if people had to temper themselves on the customization or the custom of eating, then that would certainly be the factors of that scenario. You look at Mars, people learn with the radiation that black sludge is forming, and that'll actually help the Earth and keeping the oxygen level up. One of its byproducts actually produces a lot of oxygen. And ironically, it doesn't do good in the ultraviolet, but it does great in the higher energy states of radiation. So, I mean, it's kind of ironic for a algae or a sludge to that feeds off of radiation to be sensitive to ultraviolet, which I think on the black sludge post-apocalyptic nuclear scenario that holds true. But people will become accustomed of, black sludge, creeping, being in dark, damp places and under rocks and stuff and covering rocks. And, when it dries and oxidizes and if you threw in a chemical compound, not unlike oil, it would actually produce kind of a purplish black color, like what can be seen on Mars at times in the photos. And how interesting. And but a lot of our vitamins and food come from the sea, people are going to have to curtail how they eat, what they eat. The majority of people, if terraforming, are going to learn how to become vegan. If you lived on a truly just planet and a fair planet, which isn't entirely fair to say that people have to be vegan, but which isn't, but if you were vegan, or it's not vegan, if you live in, say, some other country, if you weren't vegan and ate meat, then say a different group or other people might look at you as a predator or consider you prey. You know, to show you how it feels to be prey. You know, you're not vegan. You slaughtered something for that meal type thing. You know what I mean? I'm having a Coke.
No, this is a very important philosophical point, is that what you're saying is that if, say, a planet ran out of sea and the oceans all went away because they were fried or something, or boiled, indeed, that your priorities in life would be really much more oriented to where the next meal would be coming from, because most of our nourishment comes out of the water. I was actually, like what Tracy was saying, everything on this planet is born through the water.
Correct.
So why isn't the U.S. Navy doing something about this?
Well, you look at a lot of the conspiracy theorists, and some of the phrases that were said. Remember a lot of the phrasing that was said back in 2008, 2009, 2010?
Don't go away. The mystery guest has come to play. Who knows what he's going to say? Don't go away. Don't go away. You are listening to Revolution Radio, listener-supported radio on freedomslips.com. You're also listening to Wolf Spirit Radio at wolfspiritradio.com. You're also listening to Ever Beyond Radio at everbeyondradio.com. Yes, we're all here. And my very special friend and guest, Mr. Dr. Doom and Gloom, Professor Misery, we're all going to die, but it just depends on how quickly, really. Professor Sir William Stillings, what can we do? Run? Cry? Cave in? Evolve? Can we transcend this by the power of our minds? Can we make this thing go away because we were able to deal with radiation through the power of our minds, and we evolve through it, and we start.
Yeah.
We then can only eat food that has radiation in it.
Well, look at Chernobyl when that happened. Europe for 6 months didn't purchase any milk or import any milk from Russia, and at the time that was a huge export of Russia, was also milk. And you know, for 6 months that stopped. You know, let's look at the dynamics of Chernobyl. Chernobyl was a horrendous event, huge event. And you know, the fact that Chernobyl was a partial meltdown, and that reactor in Chernobyl was a third the size of just one of the reactors in Japan, a third to about half the size, and certainly nothing as close to the tonnage of uranium, much less uranium plutonium, in their accident, they didn't come close to what was what's stored and what was being utilized in Japan. And Russia, Chernobyl was in a very arid, desolate, deserted, no water table to speak of, really. And they had a partial contained meltdown. Everything that was released was released, atmospherically. And look at how bad Chernobyl was 7 to 10 years later, you know, and in the area where, you know, all the deformities had gone up, leukemia had skyrocketed, And, pre-Fukushima 2011 in February, Japan had the lowest leukemia rating in the world. In the world. And after Fukushima, they became the highest leukemia country. And, I reiterate, Chernobyl had almost no water table. Not just 800 tons and not just exclusively 1,200 tons of uranium, but 1,800 tons of uranium plutonium from reactor 4 melted down into the ground about 150 feet down, moved laterally about 3,000 feet, and ended up in the ocean. The fissile material was fizzling in the ocean, not just for one day, not just for, a week, but has done so every day for not much, not to mention just for a year, but several years. So, my expectations of what Northern Hemisphere would end up looking like is not unreasonable. It's not unreasonable by any stretch of the imagination. Just one reactor going up, it's not unreasonable at all, much less four of them. And, and you have these people on YouTube also, posting that reactor 5 went up. Didn't Kevin Blanch put something up that reactor 5 went up? I'm not putting it out of the question, but I haven't seen any evidence of such a thing. But we do know that four reactors had a total melt through, total core melt. And it's gone in the ocean. It moved laterally 3,000 feet and, that's why the ocean was glowing and on fire, 6 months to a year later. There was no, it was around 8 months after the fact. But that's why the helicopter footed, and that's why the ocean was glowing and spitting out flames, and it just happened to be in front of the four destroyed reactors. And, because Chernobyl was a very isolated event. There was no water table. It was arid. It was in the middle of nowhere. And it still made 150-kilometer radius uninhabitable. You have one reactor, in Fukushima, fizzling in the ocean for a second, would equate to about 10,000 times more radiation than all the water they could possibly accidentally dump and discharge into the ocean. Those cores hit the ocean, might as well just dump the tanks. It doesn't matter. It's insignificant. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference, They could take all 7,000 of the storage tanks that they constructed and might as well dump them into the ocean. It doesn't make a bit of difference if that fissile material from the cores, just one of them was in the ocean for more than 10 minutes, fizzling. It doesn't make any amount of difference in the water collection. That's just for show. That's stage. We had a huge accident, but we think a bolt had broken, or a pump cracked open and might have dumped out some water. Look over here. Well, on the other side of the hill, there's people growing third appendages and glowing. It's just, and I've done the research myself. I've visited quite a few beaches. And I've taken readings, not with just one detector, but I've used several detectors. I used a Ludlow and I used a Soik 01M, which are both very, very good beta gamma detectors. And a majority of the beaches came up insignificant. The local fish that were caught, insignificant. There was Long Beach and Huntington Beach, scary, fish in Long Beach, you know, came up, it was 900, came up, it didn't weigh 4 ounces and came up 920 becquerel, which, you know, the international tolerance before Fukushima was 10 becquerel per kilogram per year. And the fish didn't weigh 4 ounces. And, you know, after Fukushima, post-Fukushima, the tolerances both raised in Japan and in the United States are raised up to 100 becquerel per kilogram per year. It is now acceptable. But that's, you know, that's the, that's just what that is. They raise up the tolerances, of course, because there's no way that they're going to hide this. It's just not going to be hidden. What is, how, if it is to be hidden, the most viable way of doing it would be, of course, mystery illness. You're still showing that you have Ebola, you look at AIDS. You ready, JP?
Yep, let's go.
You look at AIDS. You see, you have 10 links in a chain for the AIDS virus, right? People are already born with one, all right? The 10 links in that chain, one of them, of those links, people are automatically born with, all right? And it kind of holds like, for like athlete's foot, most athlete's foot comes from the intestines. It's only one or several things externally that make an athlete's foot. But, the CE sort of, or the CE allotment for AIDS in Europe, allowable would be 3 links out of that chain. And the FDA in the United States allow 5 before they consider it HIV positive or whatever. But, and when all 10 of those links, are acquired, that would say be, athlete's foot or AIDS or whatever. But, automatically, people are born with one. So a very common, and say we label it Ebola or something. You do a few tricks with some viruses or some, do a few tricks with some, bird flu vaccine or whatever. And the body looks like it's showing, that the person's infected with Ebola. They go to cure it and they can't cure it. All the meanwhile, it's something else, like say radiation that's doing damage. JP, are you there?
Yeah. So what you're saying is that, they're going to be misdiagnosing radiation sickness as Ebola. They're going to give the, Ebola treatment, which is of course going to antagonize whatever the radiation sickness, and they're going to get much worse. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, possibly. I say it's a possible scenario.
I mean, it doesn't sound like they're going to get really as miraculously better through the Ebola virus treatment.
No, and I think that other people in other countries might experience such a scenario. And, or it certainly is a plausible scenario. Not that anybody would ever really spend their time doing that. far be it for me to say something like, like Baxter, oh God, Baxter Bioscience, or anyone else,
Yeah, that's a terrible cough.
That's a cut the bird flu.
Yeah, it's a terrible disease on the planet. Because, why would anybody want to do that unless they wanted to really, like, kill everybody? Would there be any other reason other than wanting to kill anybody, everybody?
Or if they couldn't prevent their death. You know, one of the things that somebody, that a lot of people said in 2008, 2009, you know, a lot of the people speaking out against the elite or the Illuminati, you know, what's something that no person can stand up against, something that's not partial or biased to them being rich or poor, healthy or weak, somebody who not caring if that person is rich or poor. What's something that no one can stand up against? And the answer just might be radiation.
So,
you know, something that a big wave is coming this way, and it's headed right for America. To quote unquote somebody on Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory in 2010. To quote somebody that was on Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory in 2011 and 2012. What is something that no one can stand up against? And the answer would be radiation.
Too right.
Doesn't care if you're rich or poor, healthy or weak. Doesn't care where you are. Doesn't care where you eat. There is no escape. That, you know, and it's no wonder why Japan went into the recreational way of developing, products like how to eat fecal matter and extruding the main binder and probiotics that are actually good. And, they're actually in fecal matter that are actually adjustable, and they made actually coin a phrase. Can we say words that start with the letter F and with T?
We have to observe the FCC rules, which is words that begin with F, C, and C.
Oh, as far as a Krabby Patty, that is what you excrete. Being a burger, Japan has come up with a way with recycling the recycled, and actually made a lab digestible form, because basically that's all that's going to be left to eat. JP, I have to get going.
Well, after that cheerful thing, maybe I ought to call in some people. Can you call in right now on 775-773-3431 and cheer me the heck up, because I'm just about to lose the will to live. So there's basically no hope for us unless we really go vegan from like years ago.
Well, I am saying that people should start looking at the aspects of becoming vegan, and it certainly isn't bad at all. And there's not too many planets around like Earth, cozy. And but all's not lost and all's not too bleak. You know, there's quite a lot of good things on the horizon, and it seems to be sustaining so far so well, so good. So it's doing, pretty, is keeping up the par. Certainly, it's certainly looking a lot better than I had thought it was going to. So, with that, it doesn't look all entirely that bleak.
That's so comforting. Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure as always to converse with you. Maybe next time we speak, we can talk about some science and make me happy.
That'd be great.
Yeah, and we can make, well, you know, we'll talk about stuff. William Stillings, secret agent, Time Lord, Tantric Master, head chef, bottle washer. Thank you very much for appearing on Journeys with the J of the P's.
Thanks, JP. Thanks a lot.
Good night, mate. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So, there we are. Will Stillings, with some incredibly, deeply disturbing, information. Take of it what you will. I hope everybody's fine. we're all being like, I think there's nobody in the chat room saying anything. I don't know if it was anyone's listening. Let's just check on Wall Spirit Radio. To see if there's anybody in the chat room there saying anything. Is anyone there? Yeah, hello. Is anybody out there? Oh, everybody's posting YouTubes? Yes? Oh, yeah. That's true. Hey, let's come call in. Nancy, let's speak to Nancy. She won't hear this yet, but I'm going to add her in anyway. So... She's about to not hear this, because she'll be, picking up the phone. But, I just thought I'd, bring Nancy in. There you are.
Hi. There we are.
Well done.
Wait a minute, let me get him on.
Oh, Nancy, are you on the phone?
Yeah, yes. No, no, I'm on. You called me on Skype, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, sorry. I'll let you. I'm on the air. Oops. There we go. That's what happens when you call people. There we go. Right. So, if you would like to call in, you know, I'm soliciting calls this time rather than clicking at random on random people. Actually, that was a trick that Stillings used to do. He used to just get a whole load of people, just go through his contact list and pull everybody in the group, call everybody, and people would say, why are you here? What are you doing here? I don't know. Will called me. What did he call us for? And he wouldn't come online. We'd just talk to each other. That's what happens. So, yes, interesting little scenarios that came out. What would happen if a planet did the same thing as they're doing here? If stuff like that happens? Why do they always do it? Oh, well. There goes another timeline. it's time to man the lifeboats, I think. We'll see what happens. It's going to be an interesting, let's see. Yes. Yes, I want you, not only do I want to call in, I'm going to call you in. There we go. Come on, Keith, pick up your headphones. Pick up your microphone. There you are. Hello, Keith. How you doing, mate? You can unmute your microphone now. Mm-hmm. You can turn up the volume of your microphone. You could plug the microphone in. You could unplug the headphones and plug the microphone.
Are you talking to me, JP?
There you go, man. How you doing?
There I am. I had to... You called me back so quick. I asked you if you wanted me to call in.
Yeah.
And so I have to turn off Revolution Radio, plug in the mic, quickly hit the mute switch, and I should have done that in a different order probably.
Such mastery. Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. How are you doing, sir?
I am all right, apart from feeling suicidally depressed.
You were talking about a little bit of anxiety earlier. I think that there's a lot of that going around. I think people are feeling very unsettled. I'm certainly seeing it on the station. Other hosts have been mentioning that type of feeling, and as well as in my own personal life.
Yeah, I think that everybody has their own version of the drama. Do you see what I mean? The feeling of the drama is the same. The anxiety and the... And the qualities of the drama are the same, but the scenario is different. Everybody's got their own version of it.
Yeah, everybody's got their own stuff going on, and it manifests differently every time. You know, for every unique personality, it's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah. Okay, we've got another caller. Yes. Hello. 802.
It's Greenheart, Chris from Vermont.
Hey, Chris from Vermont. Hello. Welcome. Wow, long time no hear.
JP, well, I never got a chance to thank you for taking over the responsibilities of Wolf Spirit Radio. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Obviously, it wasn't under good circumstances, but so thank you for all of your hard work. And I know it's an unthanking job, but someone's got to do it.
Someone with a sense of like, there's nobody here but me to do this, so it's got to be me to do it.
You were the man.
Yeah, that's where it is. Yeah. So
I went to a documentary about Bucky Fuller the other night by a man named Sam Green, and in the spirit of Richard Buckminster Fuller, geodesic domes for greenhouses. And we can at least grow our vegetables in geodesic domes.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've got a whole load of little wooden sticks. They're about a meter long. They're scrap wood that's used to separate planks. I got a whole load of those. I was thinking of making a little dome structure out of that for my garden. So that might be partly the project coming up next.
Yeah, I mean, if we think about it, with the unpredictable weather, we might need 8-foot-tall stone walls around our gardens to protect them from horizontal winds, and we might need shelter to protect them from radioactive rain. But with those geodesic domes, you know, I think we could it might be the one thing that saves us if we all quit our jobs and quit paying taxes and we all just go back to growing vegetables.
Yeah, and indeed, growing vegetables is not so easy. I've been trying it myself. I've got the seed pack. I have to say that my squash, actually, everything's been kind of sparse, really. I got a sunflower. It grew to about 4'6". Not even that, 3'6". The only thing I think that, well, kale is doing all right. Yeah, kale does well in this climate. My tomatoes I've had on grow lights in my conservatory all year. I've got about 3 cherries, you know, it's like ridiculous. Poor amount. There's been no insects to pollinate. That's been the problem. Which is another issue, about, you know, dying fish, and we also have the dying bees.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah, did you have another caller on too? I didn't want to hog the call.
Oh, that's okay. You carry on. It's very interesting. So Keith, were you listening to Stillings on the previous call?
Yes, I heard your whole show. I have many, many comments, but I wanted to make a comment about growing vegetables. I heard that if you live near a cement factory, the dust that they have, which they'll happily let you scoop up as much as you want, is incredibly nutritious. You know, it's a lot of minerals there. You know, you got to mineralize the soil. That's one of the biggest problems we're facing.
That's little
growing tip.
That's right. Well, many, many different traditions. For instance, there's one group that uses rock dust. You're talking about a similar product. It's like the byproduct of when they take the lime out of everything. What's left is fantastic silica and all the minerals and all that stuff. Yeah. Then we've also been working with shungite powder, which is buckyball. So let's throw the buckyball in the air and see who catches it. The buckyball.
Well, I had a composting experiment going, but not for vegetables. I composting all my cat waste from my 6 cats using wheat hulls. And I have a bobcat in my backyard that I saw a few weeks ago. And then I put out my offering for Samhain and the offering for the ancestors. And I got an offering back late Saturday night. A coyote puked up a whole stomach full of red meat. Looks like he ate a rabbit and puked on my front walkway 10 feet from my door.
Let me make a comment, if I could, please. You should never use any carnivore excrement for compost. Horse,
it would only
chickens.
Be for flowers. Yeah, it would only be for flowers. I wouldn't use it for human vegetables.
Well, my understanding is that's not a good way to go. You need vegetarian animals if you want to grow vegetables or plants.
I was really just trying to save myself from bringing it to the landfill. But the point of the story was that the combination of not mowing my lawn and being good for the pollinating insects turned out to also be good for the mice. And with bobcats and coyotes walking around my house, it turned out to be a little too wild. But in any event, I'll let you guys go. I just wanted to promote the geodesic greenhouses. So thank you, JP.
You're very welcome. It's great to hear you guys, Chris. And indeed, geodesics and greenhouses are definitely the de rigueur of the new create your own future, because you're going to have to make your own food. You're going to have to grow your own food. And
vegetarian compost.
Yep. That's right. Well, we also don't eat carnivores, really. I mean, very few people eat carnivores. You know, you don't eat tiger or hawk meat or anything like that. We eat herbivores. You know, we eat sheep and cows and things that eat grass.
Well, shark, people eat shark.
Okay. So sharks are an exception because they're like exceptionally sort of robot machines. but yeah, in general, we don't eat carnivores except we eat sharks, yes. But we eat everything that comes out of the sea, don't we? Mostly, apart from things that kind of spontaneously explode into its own blood.
Or if they eat us first.
Or if they eat us first. If there's no arm left when you pull the thing out. So,
well, blessings with Gaia to the both of you.
Thank you very much.
I'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.
God bless you, Chris. So, thank Wally, you. Hi.
Hey, JP, you said you had a little anxiety after a show like you just had. Your guest was the first one that has made that I've heard on air that said it doesn't look as bleak as everybody says it does. That right there ought to pick you right up.
Relax. Things aren't as bad as they really could have been.
You know,
it's like they say, be thankful for small mercy.
But you know, it was interesting to hear him say that you know, he didn't think it was as bad as what he had thought was going to be. You know, it still isn't over, but having that type of positive attitude is something I like, and you had an excellent show. I was really enjoying it, JP. Hi, Keith.
Hey, Wally, how you doing, my friend? Uranium's half-life, I believe, or is it plutonium? I forget which. That you had both of those in the Fukushima. There's something like 4.5 billion years. So this is something. It's not going to just continue to pollute and deplete. It's going to actually get worse and worse and worse, because it's going to it's like a wildfire that just keeps spreading. Only let me finish though. I just want to quickly finish this point. What it looked like to me when I look at it in meditation, it looks like we've had some help with ameliorating it from some very positive ETs. So I think we've had some help with it not being as bad as it otherwise would be.
Well, you know, if we ask for it and it happens, then that kind of increases our confidence, doesn't it?
Very good point. Let's ask for help.
We have to ask. So, if we all ask, let's, you know, go around your day asking for things to be cleaned up. I think perhaps what we're missing is that we are here to notice things that are wrong and to ask for them to be cleaned up. Because we can't always clean things up ourselves. But you could always say, you know, like you have the local administration authority that is there to fix the potholes in the road. This is a galactic equivalent version of fixing the potholes in the road, isn't it? We have a planetary crew, sort of planetary maintenance crew. They may take a while to get here, though, and things might get worse for a while.
You look at the size of the ocean, and the ocean is pretty much able to clean itself. And just listening to your guest talk about how he's taken and checked out different beaches, finding some clean and some bad, that tells you there's a cycle going and there's, you know, it's just like the oil spill in the Gulf. If that didn't reach shore, the ocean could clean itself up. You know, and that's, you know, the beauty of this planet. You know, one of these days, Mother Nature is just going to say to, you know what, of everybody, and we're starting over. I got to clean house and start over again.
Well, you know, that's been suggested. I think they ought to start with Bill Gates, though. Just karma, you know. You know what I'm saying?
You know, it's interesting you bring that name up because my heroes, while I was making money, was Warren Buffett. I wanted to own one share of his stock, but at $95,000 a share in Berkshire Hathaway, about the only thing I got were maybe four sleeves of Berkshire Hathaway golf balls. That was as close as I've ever got to his stock. And I looked at Bill Gates and, you know, just said, wow, why couldn't that have been me back when he asked a friend of his, hey, you want to invest $10,000 in this company? You know, and, you know, as time goes on, you realize who were your heroes were your enemies. It's interesting you bring that up because, yeah, look what Bill Gates is doing now. And, you know, heroes out there, people that knew how to make money, that knew how to talk to people, that knew that could invent things. Nikola Tesla, still my hero. Yeah, very deceitful world right now. But as your guest said, things aren't as bleak as I thought they were.
What I find is generally you get people telling you the worst scenario and people telling you the best scenario, and it's generally somewhere in between.
Well, exactly. And like I said, this is the first guest that I have heard say something like that. He wasn't putting fear porn out there. He was putting information, and he had a positive side to it, which I thought was very good.
Excellent. So, Keith, you had a clutch of points. How many have we addressed so far?
Okay.
Clear yourself down, my friend. Clear yourself down.
I'm good. So I was thinking when you were talking about greenhouses, has anybody ever experimented with a pyramid-shaped greenhouse? Do you know?
Well, they're not that practical. The dome is good because you got a kind of It's the sides of the wall, they go up, you know, and because a pyramid is pretty tricky to get the sides. However, the Russians have been messing about with pyramids as well, and they've been making these like 40 foot tall by about 20 feet wide, you know, really tight, long, thin, pointy ones. Much more like your dollar bill one, actually. That is a that made of PVC and fiberglass sheets. So like a PVC pipe, water pipe, or probably drain pipe, the thicker 2-inch stuff. It's very easy to fit together. You can make those things. You make it just, it doesn't have to be like specific sacred geometry, actually. It's because of the shape of it. It forms like a, what do they call it? Not like, like a kind of lightning rod. Electrons like to gather at points. Energy likes to gather to points. So if you form a point, things come toward it and it creates a flow. And then the flow, shoots upwards and that makes that twirly kind of, DNA like spiral thing that kind of comes off the top that you see off pyramids and things like that, that blue glow. spiraling off the top. But it's because of it's the action of points. It's the physics. It's a very physics thing, you know, the action of points. So all energy goes up there, and there's probably ways of tuning it, and probably there are certain ways of tuning it for plants and certain ways of tuning it for people and other ways of doing it. So probably the proportion of how pointy it is will have an effect on what the quality of the energy that it would be vortexing in. Thing. Thoughts?
It occurs to me that you could almost make it like an obelisk. In other words, you could have because what is an obelisk? It's a rectangular form with a pyramid on top of it, and that might give you enough space to really grow a lot. I don't know, just an idea, crazy idea.
Yeah. Do plants grow well in a lighthouse? There's a thought.
I want to build a greenhouse here. I've been wanting to do it for years, but I've had some challenges as of late. So I have not done it yet, but I have the space. I'm on a 7-acre ranch here in northern Arizona, and it gets very cold in the winter, but a greenhouse works really good. You can also attach them to your house. I mean, there's so many things you can do. I think Wally knows this as well.
Yeah, you know, you're just talking about a domed greenhouse. What if you took in, as we call them on top of our barns, we call them cupolas, putting pyramid is like a cupola on top of a barn. That would still get the same effect, would it not, JP?
Could you explain that word?
Cupola? It is like a air vent, like a little barn sitting on top of a big barn. You know, the big barn is, 100 feet by 50 feet. And then the cupola is like 10 feet by 4 feet, right in the middle. And it's usually used as air ventilation. It usually has louvers on it to ventilate so the hay doesn't get too hot. Or if the barn gets hot, it cools off.
Okay, I got your situation. Okay, and you say that you have like a pyramid, like a tiny little version of the roof in the middle of the roof.
Well, I think what he's saying is it's just a structure. It's like a miniature version of the same shape on top of the roof. So it's it allows for better airflow to self-regulate.
Yeah. Well, I've been waiting. To be honest, I've got a greenhouse that I need to rebuild here as well. So actually, if anybody wants to come over, I've got a caravan you can stay in, and yeah, no.
You know, it's a little bit far of a drive for me, especially because there's a big ocean in between.
Yeah, actually, somebody said, oh, I could come and see you now. He used to live in Wisconsin. He now lives in Gloucestershire, and him and his lady would like to come and see Scotland and Findhorn. So I may well get to meet him. So that would be really cool.
Good old Findhorn Gardens. I actually met one of the originators, and I can't even remember the name. I think it was the husband of the wife that both started that.
Peter Caddy.
Yeah, it was so long ago. It was at a hot springs in Mount Shasta, at a resort. And they just happened to be there, and he was super interesting.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I never met any of them. I met Dorothy. I met the psychic lady once.
Uh-huh.
Over a dinner. But she was quite old at the time and just really wanted to eat her dinner and didn't want to be disturbed by some gabbling idiot asking her question after question.
No, it's understandable. You got to respect their space. Yeah. There's another question I have for you. You know, we're talking about so many things. As far as the geodesic dome, there is one in the Northern California on the Point Reyes Peninsula in a city called Inverness. And they had some kind of an open thing, you know, I forget what was going on. Again, this is over 20 years ago. But they played music inside the dome, and it sounded like nothing you've ever heard. It was really weird because you couldn't pick the point source. It just kind of enveloped you. And I don't know if you've ever had that experience, but I recommend it if you ever can.
Mm. Well, in London, there is, which is where I grew up, there was a thing called Madame Tussauds Waxwork Museum, and bang next door, or as part of the complex, was the London Planetarium, which was a dome about maybe a quarter of the size of St. Paul's Cathedral Dome, which is another one. That's a really cool place. They had this great big Zeiss projector that could project the stars and everything like that, and it was really cool, and you could see the Pleiades and all that stuff. But what they did in the late 70s was they brought in a whole bunch of acid head laserists, and they created this thing called the planetarium, the laserium, and they would play they would do a live performance. This guy would interpret you know, our favorite rock tracks, you know, like bits of Dark Side of the Moon or some Eagles track or something like that. And it was just a stunning performance because it was done live in front of you, and he was operating the different colors that would spin with the music. And the music, of course, was in a dome, like you're saying, and it came from everywhere and nowhere, and you were in it, and it was one of the most amazing, absorbing experiences of my life. Yeah, it was great fun. If anybody in the audience have ever experienced that, it was once in a lifetime, really.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. We had the same thing here. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they had a planetarium as well with that same kind of extraordinary projector, which is a really futuristic-looking device. I mean, it's like right out of, I don't know, Geiger or something. It's very strange looking with all those different lenses all over it. But it created such a beautiful show, and I think we went there 3 or 4 times, and one of the times they did a Pink Floyd kind of review along with their light show.
Yeah, so it was great fun. Anyway, so yeah, that's what it's like when the sound is and you're in it. It's no longer coming from anywhere, and I think that's a sign of the best hi-fi. You know, the best hi-fi is the one where you can't hear the hi-fi. You don't realize that the instruments are sitting there, standing there in front of you, or floating in the air above you. That's what we want. We want our rock stars dead. Floating in air above you. So anyway, so Keith, more points. I'm sure you've got at least 3 more points. I counted at least 5.
Moment. There's so many things that are happening now. First of all, I think Fukushima is not as bad as they're telling us, but it is very, very bad. I think they need to, extraterrestrials, we have to learn our lessons. They're not going to save us, right? So this is my view on it. So they got to kind of rub our noses in our own but at the same time, there's other extraterrestrials involved, so they do have permission to help us with it. So I think we are getting some help with it. It's not going to be a world killer. Many hosts have said that, this is the end of the world. It's going to destroy, and the Pacific Ocean is really getting messed up. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I think what your guest pointed out was that it looks like it kind of goes in bursts or in kind of globs, so certain areas are more affected than others, and other areas remain relatively clean is what I got out of what he was saying.
All right. Okay, we've got a few minutes left. 818, good afternoon.
Hey, JP, this is Mike with Odyssey, the show after you.
Hello, Mike with Odyssey, the show after me. Wow, nice to meet you.
Yeah, good to meet you. No, I love your show. It's a great lead-in, and I do more of the same, believe me. Just briefly, Foster Gamble has released a new statement online. Have you seen it or heard this statement?
Foster Gamble. Military-industrial complex Foster Gamble. Yeah, and what's he saying?
Oh, he's talking about, he produced the movie Thrive. And I don't know what you think about the movie Thrive, but it certainly has gotten wide distribution. He's talking a lot about the White Dragon Society ending the Federal Reserve statement.
All right. Well, there's been a lot of stuff going on recently. So, yeah, there's that. And Fulford's been talking about this kind of thing. I also got this other thing in an email or somewhere that the United States, the government of the United States, or whatever the corporation is, the United States is like now bankrupt and defunct and sort of out of business. If you look on Dun and Bradstreet,
right.
That's another thing.
Right.
But I don't know. Can somebody check that? I don't know if it's true, but I'm sure people here have the wherewithal to know how to do that. So in the dying moments, yes. Go ahead.
It's an interesting 20-minute statement he just put out online, and I'll be talking about it tonight. And JP, I would love to speak with you off the air about woke spirits, and maybe we can connect sometime.
Sure, indeed. Sure, indeed.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We'll talk soon. Thanks a lot. Good
okay.
Night.
Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
So
JC or JP, what you were saying is Bishop Derek McLeod is bankrupt.
Ah, yes, Bishop Derek McLeod has probably been done for pedophilia, you know. Oh, no,
well,
did I say that? Did that just come out to me on live?
I didn't hear a thing. Yeah. I didn't hear a thing.
Somebody said something. Oh, wow. Very bad, very bad.
But, you know, he is the owner of the United States, so if they're bankrupt, then he's bankrupt, and, oh, this is going to be the fall of the Catholic Church.
Well, maybe it's already fallen, and he's just dragging America down with it. You never know.
Maybe into that hole underneath the Vatican, huh?
That's right, in the big hole where there used to be Albert. Whoever knows. You know, there's all sorts of visions about this. They're like, isn't there one about some great kind of laser beam zapping Rome, zapping the Vatican? Obviously, that I heard somebody talking about that. I don't know. People talk about all sorts of stuff. It's all science fiction or science or possibility, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, I didn't catch... I don't watch TV, so I don't catch the news. And I just happened to go on a site on our nuclear reactor here in Michigan, Lady Horse had placed in there. And I see another article of... oh, boy. Just lost train of thought. Oh,
Lady Horse. You were thinking about Lady Horse.
Yeah, I was, God, I can't remember what I was just going to say. It was another article that the one she posted led me to another one in Michigan, and I just lost it. Just lost it.
It's something Michigan related, or is it more globally related than Michigan?
It was Michigan related. In fact, this nuclear plant in that services Cook County, which is Chicago, because of the waves were so high in Michigan, they had to shut the nuclear plant down because debris from Lake Michigan had damaged the filters, the intake filters for the cooling waters of the power plant. But I guess it wasn't the nuclear side; it was the other side. So they said
that. Well, at least that's they're getting some things shut down. So maybe we can influence Pilgrim, which was. Which is another one of Sling's predictions as to something that might pan out next year. Is the Pilgrim plant. And in the last few minutes, everbeyondradio.com, come here, check out the amazing stuff. Look, who's listening? Come to me. I can give you solutions. I can find solutions to your problems. I can go right to the heart of it. It takes very little time. Whatever you got, come to me. Not about law or anything. This is about like personal, spiritual. Like you need to get to the next step, and there's a block.
I have a question for you, if I may.
Minute.
Go ahead and finish, and then call me.
Go to everbeyondradio.com and go to consultations, or check out the cool things. It's weird stuff, but it's nice. Anyway, Keith, come.
Well, I have a question. It's my opinion that one of the problems I'm dealing with is a candida overgrowth. It almost has a mind of its own. I mean, it's really challenging.
Yes, it creates its own. It creates those cravings. It's the mind
exactly.
of the candida. All right, what you need is some kind of pine turpentine-y kind of tea tree. Depending on where you live, there might be a local thing, you know. But you starve it and you kill it, right? You starve it with, you lay off the sugar, basically. You stop eating bread, you stop eating beer, you stop eating yeast products, and then the yeast will then be dealt with by the natural bioecology of your body. But we're just overstuffing our body with yeast products, and it makes us crazy and stupid. So,
what about probiotics?
That's a good idea. Replace things, yeah. Pine oil. You can find it on a tree. Boil it. Make tea. Good night, everybody.
Okay. I will look into it, my friend. Thank you.
Live long and prosper. Peace and long life.
Eyes open.